Hi, you're listening to NPR on Science. I'm Joe Palca, a correspondent on the Science Desk. And if you've been waiting for an update of this podcast, well, I'm here to apologize. We've all been on a special training program, and it's been very interesting. We're all digitally media trained. Boy, the things I could tell you. But I'm not, because we're going to talk about science today. I'm back, and we'll be updating more regularly from now on. But I plunged back into regular science reporting this week with a story about Phoenix. And this isn't a Phoenix that burned. This is the Phoenix that froze. I'm talking about the Phoenix probe that was on the surface of Mars that landed last May. It launched in August 2007, and that's when I started doing pieces about it. Now, there are two key characters in the Phoenix project. One's an engineer and the other's a scientist. The engineer is a guy named Barry Goldstein. He's a great guy, Mets fan, which I think is very important in an engineer. And he was the guy in charge of making sure the probe got to the surface of Mars safely and then worked once it got there. And the other guy is named Peter Smith. He's the chief scientist from the University of Arizona. Now, the idea of Phoenix was to land near, but not on, the polar ice cap on Mars, and landing on the ice cap was considered too risky. And in this first piece that ran the day before the mission launched last August 2007, Smith said they picked a landing site as far north as they dared.
We're landing at about 70 degrees north, which on the Earth is northern Greenland, northern Alaska, northern Siberia. In fact, the same latitude and longitude on the Earth is in the middle of the Siberian permafrost.
To gather up the ice, Phoenix is equipped with a robotic arm.
The question is, how deep is the ice? We suspect the ice is only a few inches deep, and in that case, we'll be doing a lot of horizontal digging and probably clear an area.
Once it has the ice sample, the arm carries it to a set of instruments on the lander's deck. One of them is called TEGA, for Thermal Evolved Gas Analyzer,
which is basically an oven that cooks the surface soils and ices to the point where they release the gases that are trapped inside of them. We can measure the type of gases that are inside. This releases carbonates, sulfates, all different kinds of minerals, but also we can detect organic materials. We can't tell whether it's DNA or protein, but we can tell they're complex organics.
You can bet that any reading that suggests organic molecules will touch off intense speculation that there was once life on Mars. But before it can search for organic molecules on the red planet, it has to get there in one piece and in working order. Phoenix is an extremely complicated spacecraft. Barry Goldstein is Phoenix project manager. In an interview in his office at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, he said he was confident the hardware would work when it got to Mars.
The one thing that gives me a lot of confidence is we found a lot of problems. What would make me very nervous is if we've gone through these last few years and haven't found problems, because then I would think that we may not have either been looking hard enough or looking in the right places, because there are always issues to be pulled out of these very complicated systems.
Phoenix is a departure from the last three successful Mars landers. Those all bounced down to the surface, cushioned by giant airbags. After a heat shield and parachute do the initial slowing, Phoenix is supposed to touch down gently, using rockets for its final descent.
As far as how confident I am in the landing system, ask me again on the evening of May 25th, 2008, and I'll tell you, I'm going to be very nervous until then, no matter what.
So here's the cool thing. I was able to ask him on the evening of May 25th, 2008, because I was at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and, it went, well, this is how it went. There was an impromptu press conference about an hour after landing, and we all, just ran up to the front and shoved our microphones in front of Barry Goldstein and Peter Smith, both of whom were there. And here's what I reported the next morning on Morning Edition.
So how'd it go?
That was okay.
Did you guys see it?
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Unbelievable.
Whoa.
Unbelievable.
Fabulous. Picture perfect.
It
picture
was perfect. Better than we could have possibly wished for. Everything we wanted in the telemetry, everything locked up the way we wanted it. We rehearse over and over again. We rehearse all the problems, and none of them occurred. It went perfectly, just the way we designed it.
That was Barry Goldstein, a JPL engineer who is the project manager for the Phoenix mission. And before him, you heard Peter Smith from the University of Arizona. He's the chief scientist for Phoenix. Both men warned that the real celebration would have to wait until managers could be certain the lander's solar panels had opened. Without solar panels to recharge them, the batteries on the lander would only last about 30 hours, but the wait wasn't very long.
Yeah!
Less than an hour later, the first pictures from Phoenix arrived on Earth, showing fully open panels as well as a flat Martian terrain marked with the occasional small rock. Peter Smith admits the landing site looks a little, well, boring.
I know it looks a little like a parking lot, but that's a safe place to land, by gosh, and there's not any big rocks. I think we really, really nailed it. That was the place we were looking for, and that's what we've found. Now, that makes it exactly the place we want to be, because underneath this surface, I guarantee you, is ice. There's ice under this surface. It doesn't look like, you don't see any ice, but it's down there.
Well, he was right. There was ice. It took them a while to find, and it was kind of a problem because every time they would scoop up a few chunks of ice, the ice would sublime. And as you, I'm sure, know, sublime is when you go from a solid state to a gaseous state without going through liquid. And because the pressure is so low and the temperatures are cold on Mars, there is no liquid water there. It just goes straight from solid ice to gas. And if you don't believe that happens, pay attention to the ice cubes in your freezer compartment of your ice refrigerator, because that's what happens in there. The ice cubes get smaller because the ice is subliming. That's what's happening on Mars. But they did get some data, and they're still analyzing it. And by the way, there's still a chance that they'll see some of the organic molecules that Smith said they were hoping to find. But all along, ever since May, and before, of course, the scientists knew that this mission was going to end around now, around the end of November, middle of November, because that was when they were heading into the Martian winter. And this is a solar-powered spacecraft, and there just wasn't enough light to recharge the batteries. And so, sure enough, on November 10th, NASA held a news conference to say the mission was over, and the next day, this story appeared on Morning Edition.
We have some sad news this morning from Mars. The Mars probe known as Phoenix has gone silent. NASA managers presume it's dead. Phoenix was basically a robotic chemistry lab, capable of scooping up samples of Martian soil and ice and seeing what they were made of. It performed diligently since it landed last May, but no longer. NPR's Joe Pelka has this remembrance.
Near the North Pole on Mars in winter, the days are short and the weather is cold. How does spending the night at 150 degrees below zero sound to you? But that's what Phoenix had to do. Solar panels charged batteries, which ran heaters. But about 3 weeks ago, one day, all the juice drained from the batteries.
When the batteries reach zero, kind of like your laptop computing running out of juice when you're on an airplane, the vehicle will just shut down.
Barry Goldstein is project manager for Phoenix. With the days getting shorter, the solar panels were only able to charge the batteries enough to operate the radio to contact Earth. But then, a week ago, there wasn't even enough power for that.
At this time, we're pretty convinced that that the vehicle is no longer available for us to use. So we are actually ceasing operations, declaring an end of mission operations at this point.
Unlike the two rovers that have been driving around on Mars for nearly 5 years now, Phoenix is stuck in one place. But John Mustard says Phoenix did something the rovers could not. Mustard is a planetary scientist at Brown University.
What Phoenix did, which was different, was actually to take soil samples and ice samples and stick them into ovens or chemical analysis machines and to really do more manipulative experiments.
Mustard says those are the kinds of experiments that will ultimately be needed to say whether life once existed on Mars. NASA sent the Phoenix probe to Mars to look for ice, because ice is made of water, and water is what you need for life. A spacecraft orbiting Mars saw signs of ice beneath the soil near the North Pole, but Mustard says a signal from orbit is one thing.
We all have a distrust, I don't know, that's the wrong word. We have a respect for, but it's kind of like what Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify.
Seeing it up close is always more convincing. Scientists also want to know the extent of the ice.
Is this ice just filtering in from the atmosphere and filling the pores in the soil, or was it a big chunk, therefore maybe representing quite a bit more water than we previously might have understood there to be?
The Phoenix results don't say exactly how much ice is there, but it seems to be more like a big chunk, or several big chunks. Phoenix also showed it's not easy to get Martian soil into instruments. The soil is very clumpy. Future missions will have to figure out ways to deal with that. Samuel Kunavis of Tufts University is one of the lead investigators on the Phoenix Wet Chemistry Lab. He says working on the mission has been an intense and satisfying experience.
Every day, you know, my students and my staff would work on it. You know, we'd prepare programs and, you know, transmit them up, have it do work and send back. So it's on a daily basis, it's like working with someone, and it's sort of sad to see it sort of drift off, lose energy, lose power. And so, you know, it's, I don't know, maybe hard to take it in some ways. But again, it did its job exceedingly well, and so we could have asked for more.
But no grief counseling.
No grief counseling.
And besides, there is still plenty of data to analyze and scientific papers to write, so Phoenix will be a part of the lives of many scientists for months, if not years, to come. Joe Palca, NPR News, Washington. That was stirring music. I like that music. Morning Edition can pick the right music, I tell you. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back with another On Science podcast. I'm Joe Palca.